Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
You've been told your health starts in your gut, but if you're a woman, it all starts with your hormones. When your hormones are off, everything's off, including digestive issues, mood, mental clarity, energy levels, weight management, and so much more. As the new year approaches, imagine hitting refresh and supporting your body with optimal hormone balance. An award-winning German nutrition scientist created a powerful herbal formula called Hormone Harmony, which combines 12 powerful adaptogens into one single capsule. Each of these ingredients is carefully selected based on scientific evidence and has been proven effective in clinical studies for women of various ages and hormonal profiles, so you can feel your best this holiday season. Happy Mammoth, the company behind this phenomenal formula, has helped over 2.4 million women get their lives back and feel like themselves again after years or even decades of hormonal imbalances. What makes this formula unlike anything else on the market is that it tackles multiple hormone imbalances at the same time, creating a cascade of benefits all throughout the body and mind, leading to better mood, more energy, and deep comfort. You can try Hormone Harmony risk-free and get a 15% off your first order with code CHAT at checkout.
Therapists, ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 510.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today, as we're in the thick of the holiday season, I'm bringing you a replay of a conversation with my friend, Kristen D. Boyce, where we talked about how brain spotting and EMDR are similar and how they're different. This is one of the questions I am asked so often. Would you do EMDR therapy training or brain spotting training? And now that I'm trained in EMDR as well as brain spotting, which I wasn't when we did this interview, I would say that it's a very individual choice. So you'll hear from Kristen, who's certified in EMDR and also not sure if she's certified in brain spotting. She's definitely trained in brain spotting and she uses both of them. So she will talk about how they're alike, how they're different, and what you might want to think about when you're making that decision. I hope if you are a therapist or if you're someone who's considering attending therapy or starting therapy with either EMDR or brain spotting, that this will really help you understand how they're similar and how they're different. As always, thank you for listening. The new year episode will be coming soon, and we will also have a conversation with me and Dr. Sharon Martin, another good friend, about family estrangement. So wishing you a restful, restorative, peaceful, fun, whatever you want it to be, holiday season, and see you in the new year. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm very excited to be interviewing my friend and colleague, Kristen Boyst, LMFT. Kristen, thank you so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
Thank you so much, Laura. It is an honor and a privilege to be with you today, and I'm excited for our conversation.
Thank you. I think the honor is all mine, and you're someone that I've wanted to have on here as I've gotten to know you and another group that we're in together. And it's interesting because we have a lot of similarities. We're both Daring Way, certified Daring Way facilitators. We're both group practice owners. Your practice is Pathways to Healing Counseling. And we're both podcasters. Your podcast is Close the Chapter. And you're trained in brain spotting, which I just started training in. Yeah. And what we don't have in common is that you're also EMDR certified.
Trained. Yes.
EMDR trained.
Yes.
Yes. So I'm super excited to talk to you about EMDR and brain spotting and how they're similar and how they're different, because I know that people are always, they've heard about EMDR. I think people are beginning to hear more about brain spotting, but people are like, oh, I think EMDR is what I need, but they don't really know what it's going to be like, how it works. And I think it would be great to tell our audience about, you know, how it started, what it's like and what it feels like for the client, and then talk about brain spotting and how the two are similar and different. So before we even get into all that, though, let's just start off by you telling our audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
Thank you. I'm so excited for this conversation. I cannot tell you how many times I get asked by clients, what, first of all, is EMDR, and what is brain spotting, and what are the differences? It's a question that gets asked repeatedly. So the fact that you're having this podcast to talk about this, I think will be so beneficial and helpful to anybody in therapy, thinking about therapy, trying to understand what the differences are. So first of all, I'm so excited for the conversation. So a little bit about me. As you said, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I've been practicing since 2005. So a long time, and had a group practice for the last 13 years. And my heart really centers around trauma and working through those negative beliefs we have about ourselves, that we're not enough and I don't matter and I'm defective and there's something wrong with me. And they're shaped from early experiences in our lives. And we were just little people. We were just pure beings that came into the world. And my heart has always been to hopefully change that narrative, the way we see each other and see ourselves in the process, and heal those emotions that in memories and experiences early in life that have kept us stuck. That was really my motivation to get EMDR trained as well as brain spotting, because several people kept telling me, you have to do EMDR. I got trained back in 2011, and they're like, EMDR, EMDR. And I kept hearing about it. And I'm like, I want to go check out this EMDR. So I quickly signed up for the training. I enrolled a EMDR therapist for myself, because I believe as a therapist, we have to be doing our own work in order to help others. So I quickly was like, let me check this out for myself, and found it very effective at the time, very effective. And then over the pandemic, brain spotting kept coming up, and I thought, oh, this would be perfect time for me to really jump into brain spotting. And during the training, you do your own work as well. It's almost like an intensive, and I took it, and I have a list of all these things I want to work on. It was very intentional to do that during that training. And now our whole practice is built around EMDR. So we had a school shooting back in 2018 in our backyard here in Noblesville.
Noblesville, somewhere. I couldn't place why I recognized the name.
Yeah, all of a sudden, CNN is in the backyard, all the national networks, nothing like this we had ever anticipated. And I knew in that moment, I see why we're called in this community to be EMDR trained and have trauma training, because we were right there able to help the community heal. And that really, for me, makes, there's so much intention and purpose with that. So in our local community, we're very well known for EMDR and brain spotting and trauma informed, period. Like, that's where just kind of the go-to in our community for that. And we were able to pretty quickly in real time on the scene do EMDR. I wasn't brain spotted at the time. And we know quickly if you can get into reprocessing the body memory, the emotions, the beliefs, the pictures, the sounds, the smells as quickly as possible, we're less likely to develop post-traumatic stress disorder. So we were able to even take groups of people, which is very surprising, and do not total EMDR, but some breathing exercises, some kind of resourcing. And then we were able to, there was about five of us that were able to one by one take some of these students, staff into separate confidential spaces and start reprocessing. And out of that experience is really the most powerful evidence-based research I can offer anybody is real life experience. So what you're going to hear from me is more practical, kind of real life. I'm going to give you some of the history and the practical application to not have it be so cognitive, more how does it land in the body, in the heart center, and emotionally.
Great. That's beautiful, because that's what how I experience you is that whenever we talk, you are like, I'm sensing, and I'm like, man, she nailed it, like, which feels so good. And I think that's what this felt sense of therapeutic experiences is so much different from the cognitive, you know, just changing your thoughts type stuff, and which has a place, but, you know, it's limited in how far it goes. So I know that you're not like an EMDR trainer or consultant or anything, and that's not the claim, but it's just the practical experience of using EMDR for a good long time and how it's obviously what you've observed with the victims and survivors of this school shooting, but also the comparison I think is really valuable because, again, people have heard, oh, you had a trauma, you need EMDR, but they don't know what does it entail and, you know, all the mysterious aspects of, you know, what's the magic that makes this work. So I'm excited to get into that.
Absolutely. And I thought it might be helpful to kind of go through the background of how it started so people can have a conceptual framework of how did EMDR even get started. It was actually started in 1987 by Dr. Francine Shapiro, who was a researcher. She was at the park and she was experiencing a memory. She had body sensations, kind of this looping thoughts around this memory. And she started to be observant of her own experience and noticed that her eyes were moving back and forth, right and left and right and left. And she thought, oh, this is interesting. And she felt like it was desensitizing her to that memory. It was starting to calm her nervous system down. And so she started to take that back to the researchers and some clinicians and try to get some feedback, some data back on, is this a good idea? Does this really work? How does this work? And the research was incredible on the feedback that was coming in with veterans who had been doing talk therapy for 25 years. And all of a sudden, they were experiencing some relief for the first time with EMDR. And so it stands for eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. It originally started with EMD, eye movement desensitization, and it did not have the reprocessing attached to it. And that came later in the 90s, 1991, I believe. And so it kind of has evolved over time. And now it's one of the most empirically based researched models for trauma treatment and anxiety and depression. And it's used for a multitude of avenues, just like brain spotting is. And you're using bilateral movement. What does that mean? It originally started with eye movement. So going right, left, and following either a light bar or fingers back and forth. And as it has evolved, there's more modalities other than just the eyes to do the bilateral, what's called bilateral stimulation, to reprocess the memory. So you can use what we call tappers, and they vibrate in your hands. Right, left. You can use music, and that can also be bilateral sounds. You can also do tapping. So there's many, what we call the butterfly hug, where you cross over your arms in front of you and put your hands on your shoulders, and you can go right, very calmly, right, left. And there's many modalities that have evolved from the original development of EMDR. And what there's an 8-step protocol in EMDR, which is very different than brain spotting. And originally, there's a certain, way that you as a clinician direct the therapy. And as I've done it over the years, I don't follow the strict protocol. They do that for a reason, to get the training down. So mm-hmm. you're following the research protocol. And that's one of the pieces in terms of it can feel overstimulating for some people. It can feel rigid for some people. It can feel heady. Like, because during the reprocessing, what we're doing is we're inviting someone to pull up the memory. So the therapist might say, float back to the time where you felt the same way that you do right now. And what memory comes up? That's called the float back. And so the client might report, oh, I remember being on the bus and they called me stupid on the bus. I'm giving you an example, a made up mm-hmm. example. And so ever since then, I have felt stupid. You know, I feel like I'm just an idiot. And so then what we're doing is we're targeting, they call it targeting the memory. So we come up with a target. And so then we look at how intense is that on a 0 to 10. Then we look at, we call that SUDS. And so
subjective, unit, distress.
Of distress, disturbance.
Thank you.
Of disturbance. Yes. And so that's how intense does it feel in your body? And someone will rate that on a 0 to 10. And then we're looking at what's the negative? Where do you feel it in your body? So you're naming where you feel it in your body. We're looking at the emotions. So what are you feeling? So we're asking a lot of questions. So the client's having to kind of come up with these answers. We're also asking, what's the negative belief you have about yourself? So in this example, it's fairly easy. I am an idiot. I am stupid. What do you want to believe about yourself? That I am enough. I am smart enough. Something like that. And so it's very cognitively, they have to shift from the body into the belief, which takes us into a different part of the brain. So what we're doing is we're trying to access the subcortical part of the brain, as opposed to the prefrontal cortex that has all the talking. And so sometimes that can take people out of the processing into that subcortical brain, into that prefrontal cortex, which is like the CEO of the brain, the organizer, the rational side of the brain, and take them out of that process. And then I want to explain some of the differences with brain spotting that may be different.
Perfect. And before you go into the differences, can I ask for a couple of definitions?
Yes.
So when you said bilateral, I know you said right, left, but can you explain just generally what that means for our brain?
Absolutely. So we're going between the right and left hemispheres of the brain that store different, if you think of the sensory system, the senses are stored in different parts of the brain. So we have smells, and typically with any memory, we'll have a smell that comes up. We'll have some sounds associated with that memory, what we saw with associated with that memory. And they're typically, depending on the memory, someone can have very vivid memory, or they might not have any memory at all. And it's okay if someone doesn't have a lot of memory. I might just work with the body sensation. And so this is where, as I've done EMDR since 2011, I've adapted it in a different way to really hone in on what is held in the body. So if we look at somatic experiencing, there's roots also with somatic experiencing. And you'll see some ties in different modalities with both brain spotting and EMDR. The body is important. So we're working on, when we talk about bilateral, we're working on that right hemisphere, that left hemisphere, to access the different parts of that memory that are stored in different parts of the brain. That's the easiest way to explain it, based on those neural networks that are all connected to that belief that I am stupid.
Yeah. And isn't there something about, like, it's sort of stuck in a loop in one part of the brain, and by going from side to side, it
moves it,
carries it over or into the place where it can process.
It's from what we in EMDR, it's called adaptive, from maladaptive to adaptive.
Okay.
So we can store memories in what we call maladaptive ways. So we can be frozen in time. Basically, our body, our beliefs, our emotions can be stored in time. And we call that maladaptive. And then we want to get to an adaptive place where we work through that memory. We've reprocessed it enough. We can almost have a different perspective about the memory, a different belief about the memory once we're finished with reprocessing. So let's say we started with a disturbance a level of disturbance at a 9 or 10, and we could get that down to a 0 because we've moved from maladaptive to adaptive processing. And they call it information. I wrote it down just to jog my memory. Since I just do it experientially so much, it's information processing theory. And that's when she added really the R to EMDR in 1995. So it's really based in that maladaptive to adaptive, because we are moving those frozen parts that didn't get processed in real time. And I really emphasize that with clients. Like, did you get to process that experience on the bus? No, I got home and nobody was home. Or I
couldn't tell my parents because they wouldn't understand.
Yes. And I just wanted to forget about it. I just wanted to move on from it. Or it wasn't a thing. We didn't talk about anything at home, or it wasn't safe at home. There's a multitude of reasons. And so it never got reprocessed. So it got frozen in time is the best way I like to say it to somebody. So sometimes we can look like we're adults, but when we go back and we pull up that part, it's like, oh, I'm stuck in that spot where that person told me that I was stupid.
Yeah. So insidious too, because it's like, I find for myself and clients report, like, it's really hard to tell when you are back in that frozen space of time, because it feels like a truth that I am stupid, not that I'm reliving being on the bus when I was 8 or whatever it was, and someone called me stupid.
Exactly. It's almost like it's cemented as a truth now.
Yeah.
And we're trained to say, how do you feel about that memory now? Using the keyword now to see what comes up in real time, because often it's very similar. If I pull up that memory and I watch it like it's on a movie screen. So a lot of times I'll say, watch it like you're on a train. And this is where the nervous system can sometimes be overwhelming to somebody. So I want to say that they'll say, watch it like it's a movie, or that you're on a train and you're watching the scenes go by. So there's distance. Sometimes you can think about it as a black and white picture on a TV screen to distance that memory. So it's not as if you're reliving the memory. And that's the challenge. That's the challenge, because when it's frozen in time, it often feels like you're reliving the memory. And we will have what we call sometimes ab reactions, where that's a body memory, because what we're meant to do, we know through Peter Levine's work that isn't associated with EMDR, his somatic experiencing, that when we don't get when we don't let the body do what the body needs to do in that moment, because we're in freeze or fawn or flight or fight, we often will see in EMDR, we'll see the body doing what it needed to do when that experience happened. And that can be very overwhelming for clinicians if they're don't know how to handle that. And I'm like, okay, good. We're releasing. And it can be very scary to the client if I haven't prepped them ahead of time to tell them your body may respond. There's nothing wrong with you. It may bring up some fear. I'm right here. We work on some centering exercises also before we start EMDR. I recommend that, so we can come back to center if we need to. And I say, this is just your body releasing what it needs to release. Let it do what it needs to do. I'm right here. Let it do what it needs to do. And that can be surprising when people haven't done EMDR, that can be how your body responds to reprocessing the memory.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, what you just said about preparing clients, I think that's really an important thing to highlight as well, because I've seen where people go to someone for EMDR and on the first or second session, they're doing EMDR and this person has a very complex trauma history and there's not enough of a therapeutic relationship built up. For the space to really be held, for the client to feel safe to allow whatever's happening. So this reprocessing starts and they're back in that trauma and they don't have that relationship, and they can have some pretty negative effects.
Yes, in our practice, we do a lot of connection with the client and helpful coping strategies also coupled with that. So they know how to, with our help holding the container, how to come back to center, that it's okay, we're going to come back. Yeah. And if we don't have that prep work, it can be very disarming to the nervous system and re-traumatize the client, which we don't want to do.
Of course.
So, and I don't mean that the EMDR is re-traumatizing the client. I mean the lack of foundational prep work. And if the client, if the therapist hasn't done that part, which is a critical part of EMDR, and that's part of the phases of EMDR, is that prep, that foundational prep work, rather than jumping in, we want to do no harm to the client.
Of course.
Yeah.
So it's really not the EMDR going wrong. It's the lack of adequate preparation that's really a deficit within that therapeutic relationship, or just not a deficit, but a misstep or something that should have happened.
It would be considered a maladaptive, right? That we may have jumped in too soon. And when you are pretty skilled at, you can go, okay, let's do some resourcing, which means let's do some centering, some breathing. And the tappers are actually very soothing to the nervous system. Mm-hmm. And if I could have everybody hold the tappers, even just holding the tappers are very calming to the nervous system. Like even just holding them and feeling your feet on the floor and just doing that, like we're not reprocessing anything. We're just feeling the tappers in your hand. I typically will start very gently, very softly with EMDR. So then there's a felt sense of safety of, oh, these also can calm me. And that always activate me. Yeah. So the tappers are very, I personally love the tappers, and a lot of clients like it because it's working on that physiology of the body, which I think is not something spoken about often with the tappers, which are the buzzies that vibrate in your hand very softly. You can turn them up or turn them down.
Yeah. I've experienced that. I used to have a sweet mate where I used to rent space, and I came out of a session. It was like, ooh. Wow, that was intense. And I wasn't even really fully aware of what I was feeling, but I think she could tell right away that I was kind of out of my window of tolerance. And she was like, come, you know, want to sit down for a minute? And I came in and sat down in her room, and she had tappers, and she was like, just hold these. And I was like, whoa, you know, it buzzed. And I was like, whoa, what's this? And, you know, she's like, just see what happens. And then, you know, a few minutes later, I was like, I felt different. It wasn't like, you know, I just felt different, and I was like able to really sort of express what I was feeling instead of just being like, ooh, I don't know what it was. That was just so much, you know, like, I don't know why I feel like this. And then it was like, oh, you know, and maybe a normal emotional reaction happened instead of this like foggy, you know, not clear knowing what was going on with myself. So that's my experience with EMDR. That's the only one I've had.
Yeah, and that would be EMDR. It's just you're not doing the full protocol.
Yeah.
So we're going by the 8-step protocol. And the other thing people ask me a lot is, can you do EMDR remotely? Like, how does that even work? And I'm like, absolutely. There's software now that has been developed. One is remote EMDR, and that has bilateral sound. So you can put headphones on and you can pick from music to nature. Like if you want birds chirping, you're like, no, I don't want birds. I like the ocean. We can do ocean. We can do rainforest, white noise. You can also do just kind of ping pong sounds. And it can move at a very, you know, we can move it at the pace that the client feels. The client can handle and is comfortable with. And that is a number one, I would say, most important part of EMDR is checking in with the client. How do you feel? And inviting the client to check in with how they feel. Let's check in with just let's just kind of tip our toe in the water. And we just kind of do some real light, taking some deep breaths, putting our feet on the floor. Let's just kind of see how this feels in your nervous system, the felt sense of it. So we're not just jumping in to reprocessing a real traumatic memory. And oftentimes I might start with something, what we call little T. And I know people do that, little T, big T. I just call it whatever is disturbing you at any level. We might start with something less intense. So it might be something that your spouse said to you or your kids said to you that triggered this feeling in your body. And we might start with that, which could lead us down right to the roots of where that lies, typically does.
That school bus.
That school bus memory, but you're stupid. And so I think this is the most important part, is meeting the client where they are in attuning, we're going to get to that with brain spotting, but this attunement where it says, I see you. I see your body language. I see your eyes. I see your breath. I'm attuning to you, because the therapist has to do their own work in order to be able to notice this within the client. And EMDR and brain spotting, it's critical. I can't emphasize that enough, that you continue, because we're all works in progress, to do our own work and to notice those triggers. So when we are with a client, we can hold this space for them to do this hard, scary work.
Yeah.
So it is possible to do both brain spotting, and we can get into that, but brain spotting and EMDR. But EMDR in particular, people are like, can you do that? I'm like, yes, there's ways to do it. And I was one of those that was like, I don't think so. I was all about in person and didn't think that that could be effective. Well, I'm eating my words, because it has been very effective. It, as a matter of fact, clients are almost like, I like this remote EMDR almost better than I did the in-person, surprisingly. Each client's different.
Between running my group practice, carrying my own clinical caseload, recording a weekly podcast, and facilitating and running Trauma Therapist Network, I'm pretty busy. Some might even say my life is chaotic. I'm constantly on the go, and while I do love coffee, I've been looking for something better, a simple but effective alternative that doesn't take even more time out of my day. I don't have time to do endless research and buy ingredients to try and enhance my daily coffee routine. Everyday Dose is my new coffee ritual. It's the same coffee I know and love, but it's enhanced with collagen protein, nootropics, and functional mushroom. My gut and brain have never been happier. It takes 30 seconds to make, and I never run out of the ingredients that I need. Everyday Dose is coffee plus benefits. They combine high-quality coffee with powerful ingredients like lion's mane and chaga, collagen protein, and nootropics to fuel your brain, boost focus, and give you clean, sustained energy all day long. It tastes just like coffee without the downside. No crash, no jitters, just clean, sustained energy. Right now, get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, free peppermint mocha creamer plus for the holidays, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/chat or use code chat at checkout.
Iron deficiency is one of the most common nutritional gaps, affecting about 1 in 3 adults, especially women. It often shows up as fatigue, weakness, brain fog, or brittle nails. The real challenge is that most people don't realize low iron may be the cause, and when they do, traditional iron supplements often fall short. They're poorly absorbed and frequently cause stomach issues, leaving people without real relief. That's why I love Citerol from PharmaNutra. It's a premium iron supplement powered by patented sucrosomial technology, which helps your body absorb 3 to 4 times more iron while avoiding the common side effects of traditional iron supplements like nausea and constipation. Citerol is clinically proven, globally trusted, and convenient. You can take it anytime. It fits seamlessly into your daily routine. If you're constantly feeling wiped out and foggy, like you're running on empty no matter what you do, this might be what you've been missing. Join over 2 million people who've already discovered Citerol and found the help they needed. Head to pharmanutra-us.com and use code CHAT for 10% off your first order of Citerol. That's pharmanutra-us.com and promo code CHAT for 10% off today. Therapy Notes is consistently transforming the way therapists manage their practices with continuous updates designed to save money and improve efficiency. Their latest game changer, Therapy Fuel, a powerful and fully integrated suite of AI tools that streamline documentation so you can focus more on your clients. With AI features that help by generating progress notes from summaries or transcriptions, creating contact notes directly from clients' secure messages, and automated summaries of client history forms, Therapy Notes users are already reporting hours of saved time and energy. Some other recent feature improvements include automated recurring client payments, electronic secondary insurance billing, and their constantly expanding library of outcome measures. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today. therapists ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Yeah, I know. The pandemic has definitely taken all of us who are like, in person only for everything, and saying, okay, well, I guess virtual actually works really well too. So we're like so wedded to what we know, what's familiar.
Absolutely. So that's the nutshell and just more experientially about EMDR, because those are the questions that people want to know. How does it work? How does it feel? And it feels different for everybody. When I first did it, you do it in the training you go through. It just through any kind of modality you learn as a therapist, the therapist goes through and experiences what the client experiences. And then I went through my own personal therapy. And at that point, it tapped into grief that I wasn't able to get to otherwise. It got to that subcortical level where it tapped into what was really keeping me stuck, which was the real deep, 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 almost like a guttural grief. And so that transformed my work to go, oh, it's not about just the thinking. And I knew that, but to experience it. And then what that freed up in me was life-changing.
That's amazing. And thank you for sharing that. And it also brings up another thing I wanted to ask for a definition of before you go on to brain spotting, which is the subcortical. Can you explain what that means?
Yes. So in the subcortical brain, it's the nonverbal. Oftentimes it's a nonverbal. I'm going to say it in simple terms because that's
perfect
for clients. It's the nonverbal part of the brain that we can't access through talk therapy. So what is the nonverbal part of the brain? It's body sensations, it's emotions, it's things get tucked under, almost like in the body that we don't even know is there, because we can intellectually say something. How many times we're like, I know that this is shame, or I know this is, you know, I feel really sad, but we're not really connected to the emotion.
Yeah.
What the subcortex is that subcortical brain is that part that doesn't have words. Oftentimes it doesn't have words necessarily.
So it's like, it's also like pre-verbal experiences. So like birth and crying in your crib when you're 6 months old and your mom's in the shower, you know, and doesn't come. So those things that you can't be like, well, back when I was 6 months old, I remember my mom didn't come and I thought I was worthless because she just left me there crying when, you know, you didn't think any of that. It's more of a like body, you know, message that's like somehow your body says I'm unloved or something and not in those words, you know?
Yes.
So you wouldn't be able to access that. You wouldn't be able to find that in your cognition.
Exactly. And even in utero, like in pregnancy, that we don't even know perhaps what the biological parent was going through, mother at the time, that can get passed down into our nervous systems. And that would be in the neocortex of the brain, something that we, like you said, we wouldn't have a narrative around even perhaps. There's no narrative to make sense of it.
Yeah.
And it's locked in the body. So that's the brilliance of both EMDR and brain spotting, is you're actually getting to that. So someone with significant abandonment issues, and they're like, and they may have a physical abandonment, they may have an emotional abandonment, and they may not be able to pinpoint it. And oftentimes we can get there through the roots, and oftentimes with even surgeries. So if someone had tubes, adenoids removed, or there was a surgery, they were in the NICU, or they had a surgery early on, that gets tracked. That's trauma to the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so that neocortex will hold that body sensation, that experience, even being put under with anesthesia.
Right.
That frozen, immobilized feeling, that can be accessed through EMDR and brain spotting, even if there's no memory. So we're just going even with the body sensation or this belief. And I don't even ask beliefs now, but typically with beliefs, you're going, okay, I feel unworthy, but really underneath it's abandonment.
Yeah.
Well, come to find out, they were separated from their parent for a surgery for even if it was one night, 3 weeks, whatever the length of time.
Or even the time that the parent was not able to go with them into the operating room. Maybe it was a 45-minute surgery, yeah. But they needed comfort and no one was there.
There's a case I worked on where we were with the Noblesville shooting and couldn't get past the trap feeling. And come to find out, it was because there was a surgery early on and the mask from going under the anesthesia was the feeling trapped and then the separated from our parents. It's like, of course. So we could only get so far until we got to that root memory. And that wasn't she couldn't cognitively think there was a tie there. That only came through that subcortical experience, the reprocessing that it came up.
So in that example, and I don't actually want you to give away anything of this person's personal information, but in an example like that, would they know that that was what came up? Like let's say it's a 10-year-old child and they had this surgery when they were one, how would they know that it was related to that? Do they know a surgery, you know, like, or is the parent share that? Well, they did have a surgery. It's like, and they're saying there's something over my face or something like that.
Typically through the history taking, which is a phase of not only therapy and EMDR, there's a history taking as part of the initial protocol step process. And you're going to be asking about surgeries or separations. And if you have a child, you're going to be asking about surgeries, procedures, separations, anything like that. So it could be a medical separation. It could be a trip that mom or dad took and there was a separation there. There could have been where they were literally separated from their parent because the parent was in the hospital.
Yeah.
For an extended period of time. So we're going to get a thorough history. Like if we're working with a child or we're working with the client on their medical history or separations. I find I work a lot with abandonment. That's just part of trauma. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we're digging, we're trying to get, and the person may not have that history. That's okay. I don't have to have that history. I'm just going to go with the body sensation. I'm going to go with the emotion that's coming up now. And that may take us someplace. I'm just going to let the brain do what the brain needs to do.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go with it. So I don't know what that's going to lead. I don't know what that's going to come up for the client. I trust that the brain and the body will show her, whomever's in front of me, where we need to go. And I might not get that information and the client might not have the information and that's okay. Because I can find that it's very upsetting for people when they don't have that information because they really want the information to put the puzzle piece together on why they feel the way they do.
That whole mystery of needing to understand to make sense of it for the anxiety about, well, what is this? What is this? Like this fear, something's wrong. Why is this happening? What's wrong with me?
What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
And sometimes we don't have all the answers and I'm like, it's okay. Let's just go with where you feel it in your body now and where that's coming up emotionally. And we can still get to where we need to go even without the information.
So they can experience the relief and the release that needs to happen, even if they don't really know why they needed it.
Exactly. Because that's the gift of the subcortex. Mm-hmm. That's the gift that the subcortex can give us. Because we won't have words and we might not have the information. And we're just going to know that the body and the brain can heal itself depending on what it is, unless you've had a brain injury or something along those lines. And even then, you never say never. But I'm not talking from a medical perspective. I'm talking from an emotional perspective.
Yeah.
So I want to make that distinction.
Thank you. All right. So now, if you are ready, we can get into the brain spotting part.
Awesome. Okay, brain spotting. So let's jump into brain spotting. Brain spotting was an offshoot. The birthplace of brain spotting came from Dr. David Grand in 2003. He was EMDR trained. He was a facilitator. He was doing a lot with EMDR. This is the beauty of why I love this, because we don't have to be constrained. Sometimes things are birthed out of unknown places when we're attuned. And his framework is really where you look is the felt sense of that. Where your eyes go is where we go as a clinician. We follow that. We follow where the eyes go. What does that mean? It means we're not moving the eyes back and forth bilaterally necessarily. We're watching for the fixed eye position where the person has the memory come up or the body sensation or the emotion. So we might watch the client and notice, oh, you are looking off to your right when you were talking about the loss of your mom. And what we're going to do is we can use either a pointer, we can use a spot on in their environment, in my environment, depending on if you're telehealth or you're in person. And we're going to attune to the client. It's the framework is built on attunement. What does attunement mean? Attunement means I'm noticing the client's eye movement. I'm noticing the client's facial expressions. I'm noticing the client's smile or not smile, or even an eyebrow lift, a little eyebrow lift when they're talking about how they're feeling. I'm noticing their breath, their body. I'm just fully present in my body so I can be fully present with the client in front of me. So attunement is birthed out of really parent-child dynamic as infancy. We know through research when a parent is attuned to the child emotionally, physically meeting that need, that is healthy for child development and creates a sense of felt sense of security and safety. And so David Grand took this concept, took attunement, which I resonate with greatly. And that's how I practice therapy anyways. So that spoke to me, that framework of attunement. It's not about the clinician and having all the answers. It's trusting the client's process to go where we need to go to clear, to release, to reprocess that whatever's in front of them in the moment, where as an EMDR, we're asking the client to pull up a memory, potentially. I do a little differently, but historically, if you're following the 8-step protocol, you're asking the client to pull up a memory and perhaps all the details describing what happened. You don't necessarily have to do that in EMDR. It's optional. The person doesn't have to describe it. Whereas in brain spotting, the person doesn't, in EMDR, you don't have to talk. In brain spotting, you're really less concerned about the story as more in tune with the body, the activation level of the client. So they're going to also ask the same question. How you can ask it, how intense is it for you? How activated are you on a 0 to 10? The client is going to connect to their own body, tell you what that looks like. They're going to do that subjective level of disturbance. So unit of disturbance, and that's pretty much, and then you're going to have the client just kind of go with whatever they notice in the moment. You put a framework together of what the client wants to work on. You find the fixed eye position. There also is what's called bilateral music that the client can listen to that David Grand developed. And it's hard to describe. You're going in one ear, out the other, but it's not so right, left. It's more like you're kind of right. I can't describe it in words.
It's like an infinity loop versus a left, right, left, right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's different. It's it's more of an infinity. Yes. And so they call that bilateral. So it's different than EMDR, which is bilateral. So there's a coin difference there. And the client can listen to music or not listen to the bilateral music. It's up to the client and how that feels in their nervous system. And so this was really interesting because what drew me to it is one, he really did David Grand, the founder of Brain Spotting, did a lot with 9/11 in the Sandy Hook shooting. And that drew me in because of what we experienced here in Noblesville. And I thought that is really powerful. Their EMDR was also available for those situations, for those traumas. And the Sandy Hook research was that came pretty high up on what worked the best for people was brain spotting. They found healing. They found refuge. They found it really was beneficial for them. And so he was a pioneer, I think, in a lot of ways of he devoted every single weekend going to the Sandy Hook community and offering therapy and training therapists with brain spotting. And now he's really moved towards that he doesn't want any rigid protocols that constrains the attunement for the therapist and the client. It's much more of they call it a setup. And even then he's like, you know what? I don't want any kind of oppression in this model. No oppression in this model. So I've gone through the three phases. There's several phases. There's phase one of training, phase two, phase three, and then he has master classes. And in the last phase, which was phase three, he really emphasized this is not an oppressive model. This is not a rigid, you have to do it a certain way model. It's much, much more important about the attunement with the client and meeting the client where they're at. Some people say it's a less jarring, and I'm just using feedback that I've, and some people love the EMDR. It just depends on the person. Mm-hmm. And you can use, after you get the training down, you bring what you bring as the therapist, which is your authentic self, your full present self. And either of these modalities, that is the most important component of therapy, mm-hmm. is bringing your present attuned self. And that's, so in brain spotting, that is the essence of brain. It's about attunement with the client. And that's really where he emphasizes the whole model is attunement. And we know through attachment work that how healing attunement is and repair work.
I really believe that, you know how they, I've probably said this so many times on this podcast, but you know how they have the study where they did that like super therapist thing and they found what is it that these super therapists have in common that makes them have more effective therapy outcomes with their clients? And it was all, it wasn't the modality they used, it was the relationship, which comes to attachment, right?
Yes. And I have experienced it myself in therapy. And so when we can be on this other side of the couch and we're like, oh, yes, it's so vulnerable to be on the other side and talk about things that are so hard and scary, I think that enriches us to do EMDR and brain spotting even more effectively. So anybody that's a therapist out there listening, I highly recommend doing it yourself on top of even the training and see if it resonates for you. If it doesn't, that's okay. Because it really, that's my number one thing, I think, in terms of my team. Does it resonate for you? And then bring yourself into it.
Yeah.
I'm not a rigid protocol person. And I'm not saying this is a rigid protocol. I'm saying that there, when you have flexibility in the work, in any modality you have, I think there's brings forth a sense of safety and security for the client, because you're not abandoning your own self in the therapeutic process.
Yeah, that feels so true. Like the letting something unfold organically and taking away the illusion of control and the therapist as the expert means that it's a relationship where, you know, one person is in a position to walk with, guide, you know, witness and hold space, and the other person can just let themselves feel and be, figuratively speaking, be held within that safe space and have the opportunity to explore something that wasn't safe to explore because they didn't have anybody to safely hold the space for them at the time when it happened.
Yes. Being held and us holding the space is, I love that. That's so beautiful how we are. That's exactly how I frame it. That's all we're doing. We're not a one-up position from the client and they're not a one down.
Right.
We're just holding the space. And we know, I love Peter Levine's quote that says, you know, what trauma isn't what happened to us. It's the lack of having an empathic, paraphrasing, an empathic witness to what happened to us. And that is the essence of whatever modality you choose. But really, EMDR and brain spotting is that, for me, at least personally. It's being that empathic witness and holding the space, because we don't heal in judgment.
Yeah.
We don't heal and we got to do it this right way. There's a right and there's a wrong way. That does feel oppressive. That does feel for performance based and shame based, rather than just let's flow with it. We're going with the flow of where that takes us.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a beautiful feeling of trusting the process and what you're talking about. And I think when you're trusting the process, you're, as a therapist, if you can trust the process, it means you're feeling safe enough to allow the process to happen and not trying to be the process and get in the way of the what is organically happening with that, you know, person's inner ability to heal being accessed, and rather than thinking like I have to fix this for them.
Exactly. So kind of bringing it all together, the commonalities between the two modalities are we're working in the subcortical brain. We're working on the body sensations. We're working on the active, both work on kind of the intensity in the body, and they just approach it a fixed eye position with brain spotting versus the more eye movement or bilateral movement with EMDR. So there's similarities. They're just going at it a different way.
Yeah, I want to see what you think because you have more training in brain spotting than me, but I just did my training like less than a month ago. And they were saying that as a therapist, we talk less in a brain spotting session than we normally would in any other type of therapy because including EMDR from what they were saying is, I don't know, that, you know, it brings, you mentioned this kind of before, but I just want to like emphasize it by talking that other part of the brain that processes language has to come online where you're working in nonverbal memory. So if you talk, then you have to go to that language processing place. It makes you leave the nonverbal space, you know? And so I think that's, for me as a therapist, helpful to think like, because normally we're talking and they have that WAIT acronym. Why am I talking? Like, you know, you're saying as a therapist, you are like, so what are you noticing? And then it's like, you're pulling them out of that, you know, deep processing place. So I love about brain spotting that you can have this whole experience internally and you still know that the therapist is there with you. You can feel their presence is what I experienced when I did it as a participant. You can feel their presence, but they're not talking. You're not talking. You can, but you don't have to. And you can still be having the experience and feel safe. And then when it's over, if there's something you want to reflect back to the therapist, you can, but it's okay if you don't. And, you know, people are always like, oh, I don't want to tell my story, or I'm afraid of having to tell my story. And, you know, you can do this processing without having to be in the story.
Yes. And I think with both EMDR and brain spotting, saying that up front is important. You don't have to talk if you don't want to. With the traditional protocol, and I say traditional because, again, adaptive, just doing this for so long, I've adapted it in a little bit of a different way. I don't interrupt the process anymore. Just years of doing it, I stopped doing that a while ago because I noticed I was jarring people out of the process. I was interrupting their process because it was
unintentionally,
because the protocol says go about 30 sets of eye movements, check in and say, what are you noticing? Take a deep breath or, okay, release. And it was choppy. It felt choppy to me. And but that is the protocol. And it can be helpful for some people because they get a relief. They're like, I need a break. Brain spotting, you're not doing that. The client is really, if they need to tell you something, they'll tell you something.
They're leading it.
So it's a different feel in terms of how the approach or the setup is between EMDR and brain spotting.
Kristen, this is so cool that you took the time to explain this and describe the differences and the similarities. I mean, I think, you know, I've had people ask me these questions so many times and I don't even do EMDR. So having you explain this from your knowledge and so clearly and succinctly, I just really appreciate it. And I think it's going to be, a lot of people are really going to appreciate this. I know I'm going to be referring a lot of people to listen to this episode just so, because I can't explain it to them like this. So you're just listening to Therapy Chat.
But I think the other thing I wanted to mention is it feels strange. So I think that's very important to mention, like, what are we doing? And I say, yep, it's going to feel kind of weird, perhaps strange. And that's just because we're not used to doing something like this. So I like to say that a little bit because it's not your standard talk therapy, if you will.
That's another good point, because it can be hard to relax into the process when you feel, is this what's supposed to be happening? And you're kind of stuck in this, like, I need to understand.
And am I doing it right?
Yeah.
Am I supposed to go to something totally different than what we started with? I'm like, it's totally okay. Let the brain do what the brain needs to do. Let's just trust that the brain will lead us where it needs to go today. It's okay. And it may seem random, just go with it. And they're like, okay, for some reason I'm talking about Aunt Sue that I haven't thought about in 30 years. I'm like, go with it. It's a lot of performance anxiety can come up. Yeah. Am I doing it right? Is this how it's supposed to be? And just normalizing, it's okay. This is it. All kinds of things are going to come up that you might not expect. And sometimes it just stays in one lane and you don't go to other lanes. Those are just neural networks that are connected, all connected. It's okay. Just follow it. We'll see where it takes us. Trusting the brain and body to do what it needs to do.
That's where you're being grounded and in your body. If they get nervous, you can reassure them rather than getting nervous too.
Yes. Because if you're like, oh, am I doing this right? Well, maybe this isn't working. That will jar their processing.
That makes sense.
Spot on.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kristen, it's been so good talking to you like always. And I'm really grateful that you took the time to come onto Therapy Chat today, honestly. And will you tell people where can they find all of these things that you're doing?
There's two places they can find me. Kristen, KristenDBoyce.com, BOICE. And you can get a 5-day free journal if you want it. If you're like, I just need a little first step, that's one place. And then Pathways to TO Healing Counseling, it's a long one, .com. And then if you want to get on social media, it's at Kristen D. Boyce on Facebook and Instagram. And I try to put out helpful hints here and there.
I love the stuff you post.
Thank you.
And do you, will people find your podcast on one of those websites?
Yes. And you can go to any podcast platform at Close the Chapter. I put a lot of the new episodes on Instagram and Facebook, so you can get a sneak peek of what the episode's about. We do a lot of codependency, trauma, family systems, relationships, self-worth, shame. So join us.
Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you. It was an honor. I loved our conversation beyond measure. Thank you so much.
Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today. Therapists, ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.